Today's May 8th.
Spring water or something?
Thank you. Today's May 8th, and we have finally made it to what is arguably the most interesting couple in the Bible. Certainly the couple that shares the most conversation in the Bible. To have two psukim of a husband and a wife talk together in the Bible is considered quite a bit of dialogue. Usually it's just Maharish, Losh Se'in, Kemach, Lushi, Va'atzugos, and we don't even get her response. Right? They just talk to each other, you know, like they're on the same team. Sarah's on the team with Avram. He knows how he can talk to her. So he doesn't have to walk on eggshells when he wants to serve his company. Anyway, between David and Michal, there is obviously the current king, but the woman he's married to, who knows better than David how to be a king. So there's no doubt that when the marriage was first entered, that David was, of course, he's the lowly newcomer, and she's the princess. She's the prize for slaying Goliath, right? Well, in reality, the prize was actually supposed to be her older sister. Mm-hmm. That didn't quite work. But what I have here is a Gemara in Maseches Sanhedrin. I'm going to pass out. It's a Mishnah and a Gemara. Just going to learn a little bit. I know it's a Tanakh class, so we're not usually learning Gemara in a Tanakh class. But here, take a moment and pass it around. Okay. So, when it's time to give a daughter to the one who slays Goliath, right? Shaul holds back on the older daughter, Merav, and gives her to another man named Adriel HaMacholati. Remember that name, it's going to come up at the end of today's class. He gives her over to a man named Adriel HaMacholati, right? The reader finds out in the very next pasuk that David's younger daughter, Michal, we did all these psukim last week, actually. David's younger daughter, Michal, loves David. Right? Shaul's daughter, Michal, loves David. It's the only time in the entire Bible where we're told a woman loves a man. And this is no small degree of consternation for Shaul later when he finds his son, Yonatan, loves David. His daughter, obviously, loves David, is now married to him. And he wants to kill him. So David becomes an object of jealousy to Shaul immediately. As soon as he returns with the head of Goliath in his hand and the dancing girls are praising him, right? So Shaul loses it. We ended up last class by saying that the king on a chessboard ought to be satisfied that even if he's not the most powerful piece on the board, he should be satisfied that he's at least the most important piece on the chessboard. Mm-hmm. Why should it bother Shaul that people consider that there's a warrior greater than he is? But he is bothered. That's what, when you're insecure, anything will bother you. Right? In fact, though, if I think this is, we also discussed this, the Malbim says that, no, they're not praising David 10 times as much as Shaul. He kas Shaul ba'alafav v'David b'rivavotav means Shaul kills with 1,000 men what David kills with 10,000 men. I don't know if that's the pshat. That's not the pshat. Right? Mm-hmm. But certainly not the way the Philistines understood it, the way they use it later in the story. But there's an interesting chap that the Malbim points out, is that if I just said the only time it says a woman loved a man in the Bible, there's also only one time where Shaul, the word Shaul and the word melech meet. The author of Shmuel Aleph does not think of him as much of a melech. He's always just referred to as Shaul, Vayomer Shaul, or Vayomer HaMelech, but never Shaul HaMelech, except in this pasuk. It says, the dancing girls came out to greet HaMelech Shaul, and they said, Hikash Shaul Baalef Avedari Barosav. This is hardly an example of a pasuk where someone's coming to denigrate the king. All right, but the fact is that if you praise someone else in front of the king more than the king, that's irresponsible, to say the least. So however we're going to understand what those dancing girls did, I just understand that the king is so insecure that when he hears this from them, he says, oh, and maybe next they'll give him the kingdom. As if though dancing girls greeting Shaul and David when he, after slaying Goliath, have the power to decide who's going to be the next king. Right? But when you're insecure, any little thing bothers you. Okay?
This was still before Shmuel.
Shmuel has crowned him king already.
Yes, so, but David.
Shmuel told Shaul. Right,
Shmuel has already told Shaul not once but twice that you have lost your kingdom.
Right, so that's what. That's
right,
what
once when you didn't wait 7 days for him, and once when you didn't kill off Amalek. This is in the past.
Security comes from.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
Well, with Amalek, he listens to his soldiers. Oh, they want the. Whatever.
Absolutely.
He listens to the dancing girls.
He is insecure because he knows that he's losing his kingdom.
Right.
Right. So, but does that mean that my son also won't rule? Maybe we'll rule for two generations. He did have a son who ruled after him, after all, for 2 years. Right? It's a sort of an irony, because great biblical leaders until now are there's a trend that they don't have good children to follow them. Right? You see, look at Eli's children, look at Shmuel's children, look at Moshe's children. Aaron already has two who pass on for him, but two that don't. So here is finally a great leader. He starts off great, and he has a wonderful son. And he tells his son, don't you know that as long as Ben Yishai is alive, you're never going to rule after me? The irony is, although his son is too kind to respond this way to his father, he said, Dad, if there's a reason why Ben Yishai, my friend David, is going to be the next king, it's not because of me, it's because of you. You have not been the right king. Here is the father that causes the son to lose it. Okay, so here is.
He never says that out of proper. No,
right. Yes, of course not. And David never lets on that he feels he will be the next king. Okay, so but look at the cynicism in Shaul, and now we'll start to open the text. The cynicism of Shaul is where he says, I got to get rid of this guy. This guy I don't want him in my household, right? I didn't give him to my oldest daughter. The people are pressuring me. I should give him to my second daughter. But wait, I have a way to get rid of him. So the Agadah says he tried to get rid of him because he said by spreading the word that he's the great-grandson of a Moabite. Why should I bother with it? I'll let the Sanhedrin get rid of him. That didn't work, because he didn't have Shmuel on his side for that, because Shmuel already crowned him king. So Shmuel writes the book of Ruth at this point, says the Gemara, in order to show his lineage. This discussion was already made about David's past, right? So the next step is, let me see if I can disqualify him before he even marries my daughter. He tells him, I want 100 orlos of the Plishtim, as an engagement gift. That's what he calls it. An erusin to marry my daughter. David gets him 200, and that fails too.
Right?
Foreskins of the then David is playing harp for him, and David is quietly playing harp. This happens twice, not once, but twice. And Shaul says to himself, Akenu Barosh Uvakir, which means I'm going to hit him so hard that the spear will go through his head into the wall. Right? So how could a king get away with that? He says, I'll make it look like it was an accident. Right? So he's sitting in front of a sitting target, right? It's not a moving target. And he's throwing a heavy object, a big object, a spear, at close range, and he misses twice. And plus, the reader can remember that he's from Shevet Binyamin. Remember, Shevet Binyamin was known for their military prowess. And if one discussion that the Tanakh has for the military prowess of Benjaminites, it's their aim. It says, Sefer Shoftim. That's later, yes. It says in Sefer Shoftim that the men of Binyamin could sling a rock at a hair at any distance and never miss. Obviously, that's an exaggeration, but it means to say that the one thing we know, for which we know Benjaminites, it's their aim. So he knows this is a sitting target. I'm going to just get rid of him right now. And twice he misses him. Gemara says that David dropped something and he bent over to pick it up and it whizzed right behind his head. Whatever it is. But on two different occasions, he misses David and he says he became extremely scared of the situation. Okay? All right, so now let's get to Michal. We're up to Perek Yutes. Turn to Perek Yutes, Pasuk Yud Aleph. Perek Yutes, Pasuk Yud Aleph. 19:11. Chapter 19, verse 11.
Page 694.
Everyone have it?
694.
Okay. So, David is sort of walking on eggshells in the palace. He's married to the king's daughter. He finally gets her for those 200 plishtim, right? But then he gets word that Shaul has it out for him, right? And this is what Michal tells him. Vayishlach Shaul malachim el beis David l'shamro v'lahamiso baboker. Right? This is after he misses the pasuk. Right before this is where he misses him with the spear, if you look at pasuk yud. And vatageid l'David Michal ishto lemor. Right? Michal told David, if you don't escape tonight, this is what I hear, you're dead in the morning. Right? Mm-hmm. I like it that you live here with me in the palace, you're my husband, but you have to get out of here. My father wants to kill you. Okay? So she saves his life this way. And what does she do? Vatored Michal es David ba'ad ha'chalom. Okay? But notice the way she tells him. If you don't escape from here, you're dead. I mean, I might think the Bible should give us a, you know, this might be the last words that these two people ever say to each other. In fact, they are, until he brings her back in Shmuel Bet after he's king. Right? He never sees her again. For years, right? So the last thing she tells him is not, I'll send for you, or I'll try to convince my father to be kind to you, or something like that. He just says, listen, you need to do this, otherwise you'll be dead. The Bible, again, does not usually mince words between them. They just get what you have to say, right?
Maybe David wasn't taking the situation seriously enough, and he was going to stay.
Interesting. He could feel that with that spear whizzing over my head all these times.
He got the message.
Okay. Vatored Michal es David ba'ad ha'chalom. I don't know if she had such long hair, but she let him down the window. And maybe some bed sheets, maybe a ladder, maybe. Who knows how she let him down. Vayilech vayivrach vayimaleit. He went, he escaped, and he fled and he escaped. Vatikach Michal es ha-trafim. Now, what are trafim doing in the house? That's pretty strange. Trafim are a... In fact, if you go to now to the, there's a museum in Tel Aviv, and they have actual trafim. I saw them. They're very large in the shape of a human being. They have an open... It's usually caskets. Usually people are buried there, or they would sacrifice human beings and stuff their remains in there and try to communicate with them through there. So trafim is an absolute avodah zarah. It's a cruel avodah zarah. Yes.
But perhaps it's a small one, because even though it's a rachel has small one, she put it inside the sack.
Yes.
So maybe it's a fertility.
Yes, they were miniature. They had them in miniature as well. They were in the shape of a human being, and they were for fertility. Michal also doesn't have children.
No, yeah.
So that they should have trafim. By Michal, by Rachel, okay, it's before Matan Torah, it's her father, you know, whatever she wanted with them, whether she wanted to hide them from her father, however you want to interpret that, is a little easier. This is in Shaul's household. And it says ha-trafim, as if though we know what they are, you know. Oh, she took the trafim, huh? Right? Mm-hmm. So the Radak says the following. The Radak says, no, she took something that was in the shape of trafim. Uh-huh. Okay? The Targum is Talmanaya. And however you want to do with that. Salam, Salmanaya. Like it was a
Took a doll.
Salmanaya, Salam.
Okay. Okay. Vatosem elamita, and she put the trophim. That's pretty heavy for her to put in there. She probably had help from David before she let him down. Vatosem elamita. What's the point of doing this? As soon as they open the door, they'll see that it's a fake. No, she wants to give David more time to escape. The more time they think that David is in bed, the more time they're not looking for him. This is, there's a story just like this in Sefer Shoftim.
Yeah.
Remember who escaped while everyone thought that the king was just in his cool room? He was Eglon. Eglon Melech Moab. Right? He had already killed him. And
Yadimini.
So they thought that their king was in this, you know, he was in Seches Raglov, they said. He's on his throne. He's on his, his proverbial throne. And they figured, okay, but if it's taking too long, he must have read War and Peace in there already. How much can he read? Right? So he read the whole paper from page to page, and it's time to look at. So they broke the lock, and they saw that he was dead. By that time, Ehud says, escape the whole place. But so that's why she puts in this dummy in the bed. She puts in these something or other that's in the shape of a human being. Anybody who's ever gone on like a raid in camp and you had to make your counselor think that you were still in bed, so you stuffed your bed with something to make it look like someone was sleeping there, and you put some, all right? And it says that she also put kvir izim soma mira ashosav patachas babergen, right? And she put a kvir izim, that's like goat's hair, obviously his head wasn't there, under where his head would be, or around where his head would be, patachas babeged, and she covered it with a blanket, so that when vayishlach shaul malachim lakachas es David, vatomer cholehu, they went sent for David, and she said, he's sick, so what? Well, we'll give him another hour before you kill him, what would mean for sick, right? What difference does it make if he's sick or not? I'll kill a sick man just as much as I'll kill a well man. You know, right? Right.
So maybe that's why the goat hair.
Yeah, enough of that. Okay. So they saw. Now trafim is plural here. There were a few of them in there, so maybe they were small. Like a few. And they saw the goat's hair, and that's how they were fooled. Now, Shaul is obviously going to have some harsh words for his daughter here, right? In other words, you're in on this. So why did you have to make this dummy in the bed? So you know that he's in danger. Who's he in danger from? Me. Right, you're right. I'd like to kill him. Why are you siding with him over me? All right, you got that?
Mm-hmm.
So you are the king's daughter, the wife of a prince who saved the nation by killing Goliath, who killed 200 Plishtim, right? You brought him here, Dad, to play harp for you, right? So you had me marry him, right? It was very nice. I liked him. I loved him. But you say that I'm siding with my husband over the king, right? So what's any girl going to do in that circumstance? Take the high road or the low road? What would be the high road?
Not what? To betray her husband to her father?
Or? Yeah, what do you want me to do, Dad? You want me to betray my husband to you? And say, well, he's going to say, yeah, absolutely. Right? I kill people who don't hand in David. You know, he's about to kill a whole bunch of people who help David. Right?
Mm-hmm. She thought her life was at risk, which is very reasonable to assume, then it was very reasonable response of hers.
Right, we haven't discussed her response, but since you know her response, yes, I agree with you. Her response is reasonable, knowing how crazy her father is at this point. Because she does not take the high road. The high road would have been, come on, talk to me, what would be the high road?
Well, why do you want to kill him?
Why do you want to kill my husband?
My husband. Yeah,
he's my husband. He saved you. He saved... What bug is in your head here? Everybody in the nation will tell you this. Would you agree that's the high road?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it's hard to talk to the king that way.
Okay, but two others will. Two others will. Yonason will, and the Kohen Gadol will, when confronted. And when David, at the after all of this, goes over to Nabal and asks for food, and Nabal is a little, little dismissive and harsh with him, David is ready to kill all his men for that. Man, yeah. David, don't you realize that by asking Nabal for help, you're putting his whole household in danger? The king kills people who help you. Right? That's why David had to send his family to Moab. There was no place safe in Israel. Don't you know what the next step is, David? It's why, by the way, if you don't mind this a little lightness now, why superheroes are not supposed to let people know who they are. Because then Lex Luthor will take their friends as hostages and say, "We'll kill them all right now unless you give yourself up." That's what they're going to do to David's family. David sent his entire family to Moab, knowing, as all the Mepharshim say, that the next step is Shaul is going to take all my brothers and sisters, my parents, and say, "I'm going to pull them apart one by one if you don't give yourself up."
I think the personal feelings towards David were much more important than any reasons on this subject. She loved him.
Okay, then why doesn't she go to take the high road?
Yeah,
listen to what she says. So v'yema Shaul Michal, loma kachari misini. Why did you trick me this way? It sounds like the way Lavan talks to Yaakov talks to Lavan after he was tricked.
Well, the case for the monarch always is that when you have a usurper against you, you're entitled to loyalty.
No matter how crazy you think it is, everyone
has
to.
Not crazy at all.
Well, okay, I give in because while everybody in Israel thinks he's crazy for his jealousy of David, the reader knows that it's well-founded. The son doesn't yet say, "I know you'll be king," but he says it later. But the reader knows that David is, of course, is very careful with his words. He never lets on that he expects to become king, and he never lets on how lucky he is to be in the king's household. But yes, the reader is well aware that anyone who helps David is basically turning on the king, which is why after Shaul kills all those Kohanim for helping him, because just one helped him, that from then on no one would help David. Shaul made a good example of what happens when you help my enemy. Yes.
Would Shaul have attacked Michal or killed her if he would have known that she helped?
Well, she apparently thinks so, because won't you agree that if I'm not saying that Michal is of weak character based on her reaction, which we're about to read. She is not as strong of character as her brother Yonatan, but she may just fear Shaul's wrath more than Yonatan did. Of course, as the story goes on, Shaul becomes more and more insecure and more crazy and more apt and prone to kill someone for a small infraction, right? So here is what she says.
He's almost ready, to take some vengeance on Yonatan later on.
Yes, yes. Yeah. Now, what's the rimisini? What's the deceit? You've deceived me.
She put
the thing in the bed. Is it deceit to not to want to lose your husband? No, but you know what my plans for David. You know I'd like to kill him, right? He says, I don't know. We're married. She's my new husband. We're married for 2 weeks. What do you mean I'm supposed to know you want to kill him? I'm your daughter. What are you talking about? I would never do something that would harm you like this. Right? Okay. So he says, V'yema Shaul Michal, lama kachur misini, v'teshachi es oivi v'yimolet. And you were responsible for allowing my enemy to escape. V'tomer Michal el Shaul. So here's the low road. Hu amare lai shalcheni lama amisech. Dad, what can I tell you? He said to me, "Help me escape, or I will kill you."
Oh my!
Now that might explain why she had to let him out the window, and she,
But doesn't explain why she said, I mean, he's sick.
Right. So doesn't explain all the extra stuff. She should have run as soon as he left the window. Right. She should have run and then said, Daddy wants to kill me. Daddy, come help me.
It's not believable.
But her father's not rational anyway, right. So.
Yeah, yeah. Because, you know, right, because Shaul didn't say, no husband would ever kill his wife who doesn't want to save him. Right? Of course, the show's not going to say that. What father-in-law kills her his daughter's husband because of some perceived... right?
By the way, the reader knows that Michal stuffed the bed, but to the guards, to Shaul, you know, given that alibi or that, you know, David said, you know, let me escape or I'll... You know, he could have somehow quickly done something like that.
Yeah, but then she would immediately go to the guards and tell them. You know, someone threatened me just now. Who threatens a princess like that?
Out of his head.
Okay. I just think that Shaul is oh, look, when you're paranoid like this, you know, you're.
This is what can I say? Jealousy, intense jealousy.
The history of English monarchs. With the Prince of Wales, when they fear they're usurping him.
Why was he punished?
Hold on, hold on. Wait. Let's go one at a time. Yes, first one. Yes.
So the jealousy is eating him up. It's not only it's the manlyhood in him.
Keep in mind that he had been told twice already, "You're losing your kingdom."
Yeah.
And the first time he just says, you're losing your kingdom. Second time he says, you're losing your kingdom to someone better than you.
Oh.
Right? And the third time God is going to tell him, you're losing your kingdom to someone better than you, to David. God tells him outright, he's taking over your kingdom. Yet your worst fears are coming true. So Shaul is going to, what can I say? He's not going to take this sitting down. He's going to pursue anyone he thinks who is fulfilling this oracle that he heard in his head. So he takes it out, even if it means his daughter. Look, he tried to use his daughter as the vehicle of killing him. Get me the 200 foreskins, and then you'll marry my daughter.
Why do you consider Shaul to be a righteous?
He was righteous until this time.
Well, we don't consider him to be wicked per se, but maybe like...
if you would take a look at... I don't have this Gemara here right now, but Yuma Daf Chaf Bet, where it compares the persona of Shaul with the persona of David. So. And that Shaul is considered so much more perfect than David. David has so many moral failings, but that's the difference, is that Shaul thinks himself so perfect... And that's the famous Gemara where it says, "Ein met ben David ba ella im yesh bo kupa shel shrotzim munach mitzavarov." Mashiach will only come if he has a can of worms or bones in the closet or whatever, skeletons in the closet. Because if he thinks of himself too perfect, then he will never succeed at Mashiach. Contrast this with the Christian idea of the messianic figure, which has to be so perfect it can't even be conceived from humans, and it becomes divine. So it's such a contrast between the Christian notion of tshuva and perfection and how we work on ourselves and the Jewish notion. But all right, but that's for another time.
In defense of Shaul, okay, he's king and he's been told once, twice, three times he's going to lose the kingship.
Good, okay.
How should he react?
Yeah, okay.
No.
Understood. Well, that's...
Yes, Yaakov wants to say something.
Yeah, it's very strange. He continued to produce belligerence towards God all the time. Yes, it was hinted that someone else will become king or whatever. So instead of obeying to it, he started to prosecute... Persecute.
Okay. Do you know he's going to now, as David escapes, right? There's still one more story, and Moshe, I'll come to you in a moment. There's still one more story with the famous Haftorah Machar Chodesh, right? One more time where David has the possibility of rapprochement and getting back into the palace, right? It's Rosh Chodesh. There's going to be two meals, right?
Mm-hmm.
It was very famous after when Rosh Chodesh falls on a Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the expectation is for David to come to those meals. Because Shaul wonders, why isn't he here for the first meal? What do you mean, why isn't he here for the first meal? You told your daughter you want to kill him. All right, but David doesn't know that. But all right, he expects him for the first meal. He doesn't show up and he says, okay, maybe the first meal, all right, he's not tohar, okay. Second meal, he doesn't show up and he puts Yonatan on the spot. Right? He puts Yonatan on the spot and says, Yonatan, where is Ben Yishai? Right? That's where son of anything is always like a bad thing. He says, he never calls him David. He says, where is son of Yishai? Right? That's what we get from, you know, it's a derogatory thing to refer to a person that way. So where is Ben Yishai? Except, by the way, excuse me, in Midrashim and in some liturgies, Moshe is very, very praiseworthy. He's called Ben Amram. Mm-hmm. But it's not meant to be derogatory. Mm. But with Shaul, definitely Ben Yishai is meant to be derogatory. Anyway, so he says, where is Ben Yishai? So he says, oh, he begged off, he had a festival, his family, and then Shaul loses it with him. He curses at him. I mean, it's the only places in the Bible where you have an actual curse. Because other curse words are cleansed, uh-huh. You know, euphemisms. But here it's really awful. I can't even say them, right? Uh-huh. Okay, but they're in the Bible, right? Okay, it's there. So there, after Shaul curses at him, Yonatan takes the high road, and he says, "Dad, what's gotten into you? Is there any one subject of yours, myself included, that is as the loyalty of David? What's gotten into you?" Right? Okay, so he sees that it's not going well, and he has to tell David, "Get out of here. Goodbye." All right. So at that time, this is where David realizes.
Is that when he dropped the
arrow? Yes. Yeah. That's where David realizes I have no future whatsoever in the palace. Right. He takes his family. He sends them to Moab. He himself has to go to Philistia. There's no safe place in Israel for me. Right. Right afterwards, he asks for food and a weapon from the Kohen Gadol. One man, the Kohen Gadol, saves it, gives him some bread. He gives him the very sword that David put there when he killed Goliath. And Shaul finds out about it. And he kills the entire city of Kohanim.
Oh,
right?
And the nation didn't revolt.
Yeah, you know what? It says, and now, if Dr. Storsky, if you would just remind us, you would be saying something about the kings.
I was saying the opposite. And in the history of monarchy, English monarchy particularly, the monarchy is anointed. He's anointed by the high priest. He's the idea that someone usurps his succession allows him great freedom in fighting back. Mm-hmm. In that case, he can side with Saul against David, right. Especially when the facts after the fact show that David did take the kingdom after Saul.
Well, when Shmuel was told crown David king, Shmuel understood that this is treason. That yes. If the king hears of this, he will kill me, and not unjustifiably. In other words, I have reason to be suspect.
And what happens with the witch of Endor? I've forgotten now.
So that one, she called, and that's where he tells him, I've given the kingdom to someone better than you, to David.
Yeah. So
at that point, Shmuel's probably not afraid to say that because he's dead already. Right? What are you going to do? You want to kill me now? Kill me again?
Shaul believes that. The point is, right. There is an anointed king who feels his monarchy is being usurped.
Yeah.
And his line of succession is being denied, and his children are betraying him. So if you look at it from the monarch's point of view,
I hear.
I've forgotten the interesting priests who were killed at the tower by their father.
What's interesting
in
is that
in the English kingdom and so
it's
on.
It's from the same story. He doesn't listen to the prophet. Absolutely not, you see. It's not interesting to him the first time, the second time. Uh-huh. What is good about it?
Okay, king, so what's interesting king, is that you there's a concept called Morid de Malchus in Judaism. You familiar with it?
Mm-hmm.
That the king has the social contract signed between the king and his subjects that he has the right to their lives and he has the right to commute a sentence too. There's someone who's Chayav Misa and Shmuel Bet, and David says, not a hair on his head will be touched. So the Rambam derives, actually, he writes about it in the Mishnah Torah, that this contract was signed by Bnei Reuven and Bnei Gad when they told Yehoshua at the end of Perek Aleph of Yehoshua, you just tell us if anybody defies your words, you give them to us, we'll have them put to death. So the Rambam says that's understood as a social contract that we agree with. So nowhere, however, in Chazal do they point to a Moed B'Malchus in the days of Shaul, but they do point to a Moed B'Malchus in the days of David, because David is simply treated better, except this Gemara and Yuma that talked about their personalities. That's why this is a moral statement. The rabbis like David more than they like Shaul, because David doesn't see himself as perfect as Shaul. He knows how to say Chatasi, as opposed to Shaul, who doesn't.
But this is a Moed B'Malchus because God has ordained him as the king, and Shaul knows about it, and Shmuel knows about it, and David knows about it, and ostensibly Yonatan knows about it, and Michal.
Okay, but that's why David survives. David doesn't tempt fate. He doesn't tell Shaul, listen, Shaul, you're right. I intend to take over your kingdom.
One heretical thing
make
here.
My day.
One heretical thing here is, of course, does the book of Samuel cover it up? Or you have this peculiar puzzle that when she says, why did I call his name Shmuel? Chana, she says,
Shaul,
Kimi Adonai Shilti.
Shilti.
Which means she was praying for Shaul, not for Shmuel, and it's got confused, and it got covered up.
She's a prophet, and well, I'll tell you this, there's an Ibn Ezra in Parshas Yisro, where he talks about names. Most names in the Bible are not directly related to the causation, but they're somewhat related. Look at almost all names. Noach, Isaiah, Nachamenu. His name should have been Menachem or Nechemia or something. All right, but anyway, I hear you. There is a drash in Chazal that what she was praying for was that my son, like she said in her prayer, should be Mamlich Melochim. She speaks of him crowning kings. And that's how Chazal know that Chana is a prophetess. In her short song that we said in the Haftarah of Rosh Hashanah, she speaks of the unfolding of her son's life, of Shmuel's life. Anyway, okay. Here is so we have this contrast between Michal, who takes the low road, and the high priest, who gets them all killed, and Yonatan, who almost gets killed there at the Rosh Chodesh festival, and they take the higher road. David realizes it's not safe for me here. I am putting any place that gives me sanctuary in danger, and my family is in danger. Okay, this is now there is a number in Shmuel Bet where David says, when the Ammonite king dies, he says, you know, the Ammonite king did me a favor. Let me return the favor. Remember, they cut the men's beards, and he sent a delegation to attend the state funeral. Remember that? So the Mephoshim say, where did the king of Ammon do a favor to David? It's not written in the Bible. There's no favor the king of Ammon does to David. So Rashi quotes an Agadah that says that when David sent his family to Moab, that was the natural place to send them. That's his background, right?
Mm-hmm.
Remember my great-grandmother Ruth? Yeah. So there is an Agadah that the Moabites killed off his family except one sister, and that the Ammonite king, Nachash, saved that sister and returned her home to David.
Okay.
And that's why in Divrei Rabbim she's called Abigail Bas Nachash. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I'm just telling you, it's not Gadol. It's in Perek Chelek. So this is why David was extremely cruel to the Moabites in Shmuel Bet Perek Chet. So cruel that Rashi asks, well, how would this king get away with doing this? He had prisoners of war, and he killed every two and let the third live. Killed every two and let the third live, and then he bartered those that lived for some kind of ransom. So Rashi says, how is he so cruel to them? He said, because the Moabites killed his whole family off. Because he said, when it's safe, I'll call for you, and he never calls for them. Right? Surely it was safe to call for them in Shmuel Bet. And he was king. Okay, I'm just giving you the background on that. So David is in a quandary now. There's no place for him to go. The only thing to try to do is to convince the king that I don't mean to kill you, which he gets two chances to do. One when he's holding the corner of his garment, and one when he's holding his spear and his canteen, and he says, Shaul, not once but twice, I could have killed you. If you say, I want to take over your kingdom, here's my chance. I don't. You're chasing a dead fly. You're chasing a dog. Why are you doing this? So it was just about this time that Shaul had heard that there was a massive collection of Philistine soldiers that were coming to threaten Israel. And he left that place, and it says they called the place Sela HaMachlekot. Sela HaMachlekot. Why? So Rashi cites the Medrash Tehillim. It says, because Shaul had to struggle whether or not he should remove the army from chasing David in order to save the... What? Between killing David and saving your people from Philistines, it was a struggle in your mind which one to do? Right? Look how crazy this man has become. Right? So, in the midst of all of this, David now, I think this is a slip-up, but in chapter 25, David goes to a man named Nabal HaKarmeli. It says that Shmuel died, he can't go to Shmuel for help anymore, and he asks Nabal HaKarmeli for help. Turn to chapter 25. Shmo Kenu is a famous Amar Navol Belibo, Ein Elohim. So this man has 3,000 sheep, he has 1,000 goats, and he's shearing his sheep in the Carmel. Now Carmel is far up north enough away from Shaul to maybe be safe. Is any place safe to get to help David? He should know better. There's a whole city of dead Kohanim because you asked for help. All right, but if Nabal, I can't tell this, of course. I have no way of knowing. But if Nabal tells him, listen, David, I really want to help you. In fact, I'm going to leave some food for you over in the field, but please be careful. If word gets out to the king that I helped you, what happened to the Kohanim will happen to me and my people. Does that sound fair to you? Instead, Nabal responds with guile and He says, well, who is Ben Yishai that I should... So his wife, who was the only woman in the Tanakh called beautiful and smart, right? There are a number of women called smart and a number of women called beautiful, but they don't meet. And she saves the day for David.
She wasn't afraid.
So she goes down to the... Now, what's interesting is that the conversation between David and Abigail is greatly enhanced in the Gemara and Megillah Daf Yud Daled, and coincidentally in Medrash Tehillim, Perek Yud Daled. And there is a great contrast between the two sources of what she says to him. In the Gemara, she says, David, your fame has gone far and wide. Here's food for you. I heard my husband acted very foolishly. Please don't do anything. Kishmo Kenhu, his name is Nabal. He is a Nabal. Please cut us some slack here, and here's the food. So she says, why do you want to kill my husband and my whole household? He says, because he's married b'malchus. So she tells him, excuse me, David, you're not king yet. Her lashon in the Gemara is Adayin lo yotza tovacho ba'olam. Your teva, your nature is not. If my husband thought you were king, he would not have talked to you that way. You can't kill him based on the fact that you're Marib Malchus when there's another king ruling in Israel. As much as you and I might agree that he's not acting like king and you should be king, but you know when they finally crowned David king in Shmuel Bet Perakeh, they say, David, we knew even when Shaul was king that you would one day be king. We knew you were the one who ruled, who was the general winning all our battles. You could forgive David at that point, saying, really? So why didn't any of you come out to help me? Or to try to convince the king that he was wrong in chasing him? Well, you know how it is. So that's the source in Maseches Megillah. In Medrash Tehillim, she comes out like this to David. David Melech Yisrael Chayev Kayam. Oh my goodness, I can't believe my husband didn't give you. And she's referring to him throughout the whole conversation 4 or 5 times as Melech Yisrael, Melech Yisrael, Melech Yisrael. Why do you want to kill my husband? So he goes, because that's no way for a person to respond to Melech Yisrael. So he tells him, no, even if you're king, even Melech Yisrael, it's not proper to now that flies in the face of the Gemara. The Gemara says that there's something called Marav Malchus. Someone who talks the way Naval talked to actually a king would be Chayav Misa. Right? So apparently, I would like to suggest to you, Medrash Teilim is a very late Medrash, is that the concept of Marav Malchus evolved over time. It would even be considered for a king to kill Naval in Shmuel Malv Perkhafei to be a breach of the Jewish way of kingship. Okay, so what happens is that the reader can already feel that this woman is going to be David's wife soon,
mm-hmm.
right? And then she hints to him, "Oh, but that I can only be your handmaiden to wash your feet," which is clearly a euphemism,
mm-hmm.
like when David tells Uriah, "Go home and wash your feet." Now, washing your feet, sometimes washing your feet is just washing your feet. If it's being told to someone who just traveled in the desert and their feet are dry and there's sand all over the place. Like the angels in Bereishis Yud Chet.
Uh-huh, yeah.
But here, for David to tell Uriah, go home and wash your feet, and by the way, it's euphemism even outside the Bible. It's used in other cultures as well. So here, when she says, if I can only be your handmaiden to wash your feet, she's proposing to him.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And David recognizes that, and after Nabal dies of a heart attack when he realizes that his wife gave up all this food, he does. I'm not sure. That's what's written in the Tanakh. So David collects her, right? That's the Lashon. And then he marries another woman, Achinoam Yisraelis, right? And that's the mother of his first child. So he marries two. Wait a second, David. You're married to the king's daughter, and you marry two women in addition. What's with that? So the last pasuk in Perek Chaf Hei tells us that. Look at Perek Chaf Hei pasuk Mem Gimel. Vesachinoam lokach David miYisrael vatiena gam shtehem lo nashim. Now he had two wives. Wait a second. He had three wives. Yeah, but not for long. Take a look at the very next pasuk. V'Shaul nosan es Michal bito Eishes David. Just in case you forgot, Eishes David lapalti ben Laish asher migalim. How can he do that? This is a married woman. It's one thing. All right, we know that polygamy, okay? But polyandry? What's going on with this? She already has a husband.
Where is this? Which verse?
Perek Chaf Vav pasuk Aleph. Actually, it's the last pasuk of Perek Chaf Hei.
After or before their estrangement?
This is well before then.
This is well before.
No, he demands Michal's return of Avner, if you want to make peace with me later in Shmuel Bet. It's just a question of how many years are between these stories. But here, Shaul takes Michal, his daughter, and it says Eishes David. I mean, it means that they're husband and wife.
Yeah.
And the king has the power to unhusband a woman like that?
Yeah.
I don't. You know what? At this point, we can't ask why Shaul is doing things. But if Michal is really a married woman, and then she went to another, I mean, how did David even take her back afterwards? Because that contravenes a Torah mitzvah.
But
if
I understand
it
correctly, then
Michal
has to marry her
back.
Because if
she's
not counted. No, they say they didn't.
Right, so let's take a look. Let's take a look at
no later.
Palti Bagla, you know, it says that Nietz Cherev Beino Leveina, and he put a sword in the bed and he said, no one passes over this sword. You know, he never touched her, the Gemara says. The rabbis like him. All right, let's open up the Gemara that we started now. No, but you see what Shaul is doing. The word got out that David is marrying. David leaves my wife in the palace. I'm not going to leave my marriage age daughter to be sitting around in Aguna waiting for a fugitive to come back.
He just wanted to kill him.
Right? And if he does come back, I'm going to kill him. So you know what? He's as good as dead. So I'm giving my daughter to another man. Now the question is, if Michal really loved David, why does she let herself be taken by another man?
No choice.
How could she protest?
She probably could not protest her father at this point. However, I'll tell you, the rabbis were not in the bedroom with them. But they have a tradition that perhaps because David takes her back afterwards, but they have a tradition that Palti was an upright man, right? You ever hear of a Gemara in Sanhedrin? Tokvo Shalzan, Vasnuso Shalze. You ever hear of that? That's so good. It compares three men who had a great test of moral integrity. One was Yosef, right? The second was Boaz. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. With, but with, yes. And the third one is Palti ben Laish. And they say Palti ben Laish's test was far greater than the other two. Because he, the one with the greatest reason to think it's okay to do this, maybe Yosef, because Yosef not only can possibly think it's okay to do this, but he's the one who knows. Well, no, probably maybe even Michal also. In other words, Yosef may know if I don't give in to her, she'll have me killed.
Right.
If I give in to her husband may find out and he'll kill me. That's for sure. If I don't give in to her, who knows what she's capable of doing? Right? Look, and then the Medrash says that when Potiphar threw him in the jail, he winks at Yosef and he says, listen, I know you didn't do this. Because if you did do this, I would kill you. You know, of course, in Egypt, a slave makes a pass on his master's wife. Forget it, you're dead. So he says, Yosef, I know you didn't do this. But, you know, this is where my brother's daughter. What am I going to do? Right? So, what can I say? But with the case of Michal, so she can tell her father, okay, I'll go through the motions. I'll take him into my room. Right? Yichud Pnuya is not usher yet, right? If you know what I mean? Yichud Pnuya is usher only later by Tamar and Amnon. So they have Yichud. But he didn't go near her. He wouldn't touch her because he said, this is a married woman. It's David's wife. I want nothing to do with this.
He cries for her when he has to give her up.
Oh, yeah, yes, that's a good point. He cries for her when he has to give her up. He cries, he runs after her, he cries for her. Because he cries because of a missed opportunity. Wouldn't it have been nice if David just would do the right thing and just die, you know? So, Palti doesn't know about the promise. Okay, let's read this Mishnah, and we'll still have to do one more week of David and Michal. Okay, lo yarbelo noshim. The king is not allowed to have too many wives. Ella, okay, Shmona Esrei. It's good to be the king. Okay, so Rabbi Yehuda Omer, mar behu lo ubevad shelo yuhu mesiros eslibo. You know, you could have more than 18. Just make sure they don't turn your heart astray. Rabbi Shimon Omer, afilu achas u mesiros libo areze lo yisena. One is too much if she's mesiros libo.
Yeah, right?
In Cain, lamanamar lo yarbelo noshim. Don't let the Torah not say, don't have too many wives. Let the Torah say, don't have wayward wives, right? Yeah. Don't have wives that will drive you astray. So the Gemara answers, no, because to teach you, lo yarbelo noshim da afilu ka avigayo.
Even
if she's like a good wife, once he has 18, no good. So when we know when David takes Avishag, the Haftorah of Parshas Chayisar, so you know it says, v'amelech lo yida'o, the king didn't know her. So you know she says, listen, I'm consort of the king. So David says, listen, I'm doing tshuva, because I'm doing tshuva when I took a woman I shouldn't have. So now I'm doing tshuva by not taking a woman that I can. Right? You follow?
Which one you should?
This is Avishag. To talk about.
Which one?
This is the woman who sent.
Yeah.
Bathsheba. Yeah.
Ah.
So she answers him very snarkly. She says, ah, the ganav can't steal anymore, and he's blaming his on his tshuva. In other words, it's too late for you to do that kind of tshuva, right? So, mm-hmm. Well, you have to look at the Gemara yourself.
It's a well-founded concept in the Rambam.
What happens? Very famous concept. Mm-hmm. That's what Yosef is trying to do with his brothers, to put them into a very similar position to that needed a serious atonement for what you did to me. Right?
Right.
Right. So, let's just take a look a little of some Agadita here at the bottom. You see where I put the box around in the Gemara?
Uh-huh.
It says, Hani Shmon Esrei Minol. Where did rabbis get the number 18?
Yeah.
Dichsif. Vayevoldu David Banim Bechevron, Vehi Bechoro Amnon, that's one, Achinoam Yisraelis. That's the woman he just married.
Uh-huh.
Umishneu Kilov Lavigayel, that's the second one. Eshes Novel HaKarmeli. Look at that, it tells us, still tells us, the wife of Novel HaKarmeli. Hashlishi Avshalom Ben Ma'acha. Ma'acha was not born Jewish. That's Avshalom, the daughter of the son of Macha. Revi Adonia ben Chagis. He's the guy who rebels in the beginning of Malachim Aleph. Chamishi Shfatya ben Avital. Not too much known about him. Hashishi Yitra'om le'egla, Eishes David. That one's called Eishes David. Eila yuldu le'David b'chevron. So that's six. He had six wives in Chevron. The Kamalei Navi im Ma'at. If you didn't have enough wives, ve'osifoloch kahena v'chahena. You get it? Another six and another six. That's where we get 18.
Mm-hmm. But there were 10 concubines.
Yeah, that's true. But this is not accounting for that. So Gemara says, wait a second. What about Michal?
Mm-hmm.
She was also a wife. Was he ever married to her at the same time as these six? Of course. She's about to be returned to him when this pasuk is recited. So it should be 21, no?
Mm-hmm.
So the Gemara says, no, this Egla is actually Michal.
Oh.
She gave birth last. She actually gave birth the day she died.
Oh.
How do we know she gave birth the day she died?
It says, probably.
Because it says that... Wow, what a strange way to say it. After she rebuked David at the Saf Torah, just a few weeks ago, in Parsha Shemini, after she rebukes David, it says that David parted from her and she didn't have a child till the day she died. Now, does that mean she had a child? She died in childbirth? Yeah, that's what the Gemara wants to tell us. So that she's one of these six, right? She's one of these six, and therefore the number concludes at 18. Okay? All right, So when Shaul learns that David dares take on other wives in addition to my daughter, so I take my daughter away. I'm not going to live like this. So now, the rest of Shmuel Aleph, you know what happens. Shaul meets an unhappy demise. Mm-hmm. David is crowned king just by Yehuda.
Mm-hmm.
And based on an oracle, there's an amazing Tosfos in the second paragraph in Shabbos, based on an oracle that God told Yaakov. He said, listen carefully, he says, U'melochim mechalotzecha yetzeu, the end of the sixth Aliyah in Parshas Vayishlach. Mm-hmm. Kings will yet depart from you. What do you mean, yet depart from you? I've had all my children. He still hadn't had Binyamin when that was said.
Mm-hmm.
So you get it? U'melochim mechalotzecha yetzeu. Yet two kings will yet depart from you. So when the Tosfos cites a medrash that says, what narishkeit, what insanity could be in the mind of Avner to crown Ishbosheth king when it's so obvious that David should be king over all of Israel? So one could be out of loyalty.
Mm-hmm.
I served Shaul. I would like to serve his son. Two, Ishbosheth was his cousin. Mm-hmm. Who wouldn't rather have your cousin as king than someone from another tribe? And three, this is what Tosfos says, is that the oracle that there should be two kings from Binyamin could only be true if a son of Shaul rules also. So he crowned him king, fine. Things didn't work too well for Ishbosheth. He's taking naps in the afternoon, right? Naps in the afternoon do not work well with anybody. Anybody in the Tanakh who takes a nap during the afternoon gets killed. I'm not joking. And even David, it says David got up in the afternoon and he took a stroll on his on his patio when he saw Bathsheba. What are you doing taking naps in the afternoon? when there's a war going on. Memnock, okay, because he's up all night saying tell him. I get that. But okay. So when Avner is accused by Ish-bosheth of sleeping with Ritzpah bas Aya. Who's Ritzpah bas Aya? She actually is famous at the end of Shmuel Beis. You'll see later, but another time. Ritzpah bas Aya was one of Shaul's wives. So accusing a man of taking a former wife of a king is like accusing someone of taking over the kingship. Yeah, mm-hmm. Like Hamlet and Macbeth and things like that. So, or you know, Akoveshes Hamalchus imi babayis is really what Achashverosh is telling Haman, right? He thinks that Esther and Haman are plotting an insurrection on me with these parties, right? So, Achashverosh is very paranoid, but Shaul may even be going beyond that in our story, right? Okay, So Ish-bosheth accuses Avner of taking Ritzpah. Avner does not take it well. Basically, Avner tells him, what, you think I have to marry a former wife of your father in order to solidify my hold on power? You're only king because I say so. Right? I don't need to take anybody to have power. Right? In fact, I'll show you what power is. I'm going to give over your whole kingdom to David. How do you like that? Mm-hmm. Now, I think he really was sleeping with Ritzpah bas Aya, because there's no way that Ish-bosheth would fabricate that. He just thought it's wrong. This woman was my father's. In practically every society, a woman who's once married to a king is not to be married to someone else. So that's just the fact. So Avner makes his way over. Ish-bosheth is even powerless to do anything about it. He makes his way over to David, and he says, "I would like to bring you all the other 11 tribes, and you will rule over all of them." Now, this is theoretically very good news for David. Mm-hmm. It's very bad news for
Yoav
ben Tzruya. Very bad news for Yoav. And Yoav already has a good reason to hate Avner. He killed his brother.
All right.
Right, in that battle in the previous chapter. So it's bad news for Yoav. Plus, Yoav feels, you killed my brother, you're a traitor to David, because you, the only reason why there's another king ruling is because of you. Right? Okay, and three, if Avner goes over to David's side, it's very likely that he's going to take Yoav's job. Right? So Yoav is teaching us something very early on in Shmuel Bet. Don't cross Yoav. Mm-hmm. You will get what's called the Chomesh treatment. You know what that is?
The fifth rib,
yes. The knife in the fifth rib kills immediately.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
That's where the heart is.
The fifth rib is, and he knows, Elachomesh, Veloshina. He didn't have to hit him again. He just, done. He does it all over Shmuel Bet. Yoav is very, very efficient at avenging. And Yoav happens to have some goods on David later on that makes him impervious to any of David. That's why he has to get Shlomo to get even with him. Yes. Right?
In David's will.
Right, because he knows that Uriah probably didn't open the letter that said send him to die, but Yoav obviously did. Mm-hmm. Right. Okay. So anyway, Ish-bosheth is going to gacht in Atzaris without Avner's support. In fact, in the very next chapter, he's assassinated. But Avner comes to David, and here is where I'll close today's shir. David has to contemplate: is he a double agent? Yoav thinks he is. When Yoav finds out that Avner was in town, he goes, "What? And you didn't kill him? He's the one who crowned Ish-bosheth king. What's the matter with you?" He's only coming here to see where you're coming and going, and to see how to assassinate you, right? And you hear all of the jealousy dripping all over Yoav's words, right? Mm-hmm. So David says, you know, I think this is good diplomacy. I'd like to solidify some power over the tribes. So Yoav, without telling David his plans, you know, kills Avner. And it seems that it just doesn't look good for David.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It just doesn't look good. David sings a terrible dirge for Avner. He sings a long eulogy, and it says at the end, and all of Israel knew that David wasn't behind the assassination. You know, Yoav is not only his chief general, it's his nephew, right? So whatever Yoav does, it's hard to imagine he's doing not with the, you know, he's a terrorist, but the terrorist still has, you know, someone in charge. How do you do this with, right? Anyway, so this is what David tells Avner. Avner, you want to come to my side? Fine. I look forward to it, but only if you can do one thing. Your homework is for next week. What is that one thing? Anybody know right now?
Bring me my wife.
She was taken from me a long time ago. She was taken from me from the king of Binyamin, and now you are moving away from the king of Binyamin. Show me that you actually do have the power by bringing me my wife, because surely Ish-bosheth does not want her brought back to David. Right? Her return to David would certainly seal his fate.
Yes.
Being married again to the daughter of King Shaul. So this is what a clever way for David, A, to get back his wife. Maybe he does love her. There's some old times they could remember, maybe. And he gets to test if Avner does have the power to flout the will of Ish-bosheth. And that's what we'll do. We'll continue next week. Okay.
Probably all the guys are needed. That's it.